Hey guys,
we're back.
It's time for another episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Yeah.
I am Rich Liebig.
I am Michael Costanzo.
And you've tuned in for the only podcast that'll give you the latest in sports, entertainment, odd news, and whatever's on our minds, right?
Yes, let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life.
That is correct. Coming at you with the Portal music from... Yeah.
From the official Portal 2 soundtrack.
Yeah.
Science is fun.
Is that the name of the
title? That's the name of the track.
That's awesome.
And we're fun too, so we thought that was a good parallel.
All for science!
Yes, for science.
I bet you're science. We do what we must because we can. Doesn't go with this music, but just a little shout out.
It's good, yeah.
Shout out. Very good choice of music there, Mike.
Thank you.
So there we go. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Rich?
Doing pretty good.
That's good to hear.
I don't hate you.
So you do have Portal sounds.
I only had that one. It was on my secondary soundboard for you.
Oh, nice.
I don't hate you.
Oh, that's nice to know. And folks, we don't hate you either.
No. Though that's coming from GLaDOS.
She really hates you.
I just realized something. If we just introduce GLaDOS into the system, what's going to happen to Harbinger?
Assuming direct control.
He's not going to let GLaDOS take over.
Yeah, uh-oh. That could be a battle of epic proportions.
If there's many AI characters, it begs the question, are we real?
Oh my gosh. And then on top of that, if I'm dreaming right now...
The top is still spinning.
Yes!
You know, that's interesting. That's interesting that we bring that up because we're going to dive into some movie conversations later in the show. But why don't we kick off with the sports sampler?
All right, let's get into the sports sampler. Do you want to kick it off, Mike?
Actually, I thought you were going to kick it off because you wanted to talk about the big thing in sports right now, March Madness.
Oh, yes, March Madness.
Let's talk about March Madness.
Oh, yeah, March
Something
Madness.
Something that I don't follow, but I don't care. I'll talk about it.
Good. That's a great way to start off a segment, Mike.
I know. It's already this fatalist point of view. Yeah. I don't know anything about it. Woe is me. Anyway, go ahead, Rich.
All right, so let's jump into this March Madness. That's the big headline going on right now. The NCAA tournament, men's basketball. They announced the 68 teams that are in it. Very exciting to see all these college teams finally get the nod that they're playing, where they're going to be at in the bracket. And, you know, it's just fun to do a bracket, you know, to match all these teams and pit them against each other.
Yeah, it is. I don't know much about it, but I love filling out the bracket.
Yeah, you're a bracketologist?
I just take that 16 seed and I take it all the way to the Final Four. Just for the sake of it. I remember once we filled out one in high school. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I did pretty well. Like, for not knowing any of the teams, I think I was, like, in the top five or something of the people that you had fill in brackets.
I mean, yeah, that's a part of the fun, is that you might be the world's biggest follower on college basketball.
And get it completely wrong.
Yeah, and you still might get it completely wrong.
Yeah.
You know? And especially with the way the brackets are set up, where... If you're part of a team that's expected to go deep into the tournament, you're not only concerned with the immediate opponent that you're facing in that first round, you're also concerned with the teams that are possibilities for you in the second round, in that Sweet 16 round, in that Elite 8 round, right. And then you're past to try and get to the Final Four. So, you know,
there's a lot of pressure on those top seeds.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine if one of them went out in the first round?
That's never happened.
That's never happened?
No. Well,
if I fill out a bracket, I'm going to have one team have that happen to them.
A 16 seed has never upset at a one seed in the first round.
Wow.
It's just never happened. Because it would be... You're literally...
There'd be anarchy.
You're talking about two ends of the college basketball spectrum, because what they do is... And I was telling you this.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier.
What they do is they choose the 64. Now there's 68 teams, but there's 64 teams that, you know, that are going to get slots in this bracket.
Right.
And what they do is they don't separate them into 16 each and then make little brackets for them. What they do is they list all the teams from number 1 to number 64, but now it's number 1 to 68, but whatever.
Craziness.
Just for the sake of us being streamlined on this, we'll
say 64.
We'll say 64 because there's playing games, but you know, just so that we're clear, 64.
It's 64.
They rank them from 1 to 64, and then they fill out the bracket. They place the teams in an S formation. So number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4 are the top seeds in each of the four brackets.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. So what he's saying is that there's four number one seeds, but there's only one true number one seed. The other three are 2, 3, and 4.
If you want to
break it down that way, so
right,
the people understand.
And then by the time you get to the 15 and the 16 seeds, you're talking about teams that could have missed the tournament easily.
They're like 60 through 64.
Yeah,
you know, there's less seeds.
And all right, I'll bring this element into it too. How you get into this tournament? There's two ways you get into this tournament. Number one is you have to be invited by the coaches judging board, which those are called at-large bids. And then the second way you get into it is winning your conferences or your division's own unique championship, and that gets you an automatic pass to the NCAA tournament. Now, this caused a little bit of controversy this year.
Uh-oh.
Because,
I love controversy.
Because Liberty University went 15-20 this year. They didn't even have a 500 record, but they ended up winning their division championship.
Seriously? So
yeah.
So they're in it.
They're in it, but they're a number 16. I think they're playing for a number 16 seed.
They're like the 68th team.
Yeah, they're literally the 68th. Yeah, they're probably one of those 67, 68 teams.
That's the team I'm picking to go all the way because nobody expects them.
Yeah, I think they lost last night.
Never mind.
Yeah, so they're already out of it. But
whoops.
But it brings in, you know, it brings in the whole idea, should stuff like that happen? I think the way that it's set up works.
Yeah. I think it works for the most part.
Yeah. Even if sub 500 teams get in, usually that's a rarity. And it's kind of like the NFL, the one season when the Seahawks went 7-9 and they won the division.
Normally those teams are weeded out fairly early on. The Seahawks won that one playoff game.
Yeah, knocked off the Saints, too. How about that?
I was watching that game, and I couldn't believe it. I was literally, my eyes were the size of dinner plates, like, the entire time.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
A 7-9 team knocked off the defending Super Bowl champions.
My jaw was on the floor. I was like, this can't be happening.
So, I mean, sometimes you have to argue that if that's the way the rules are set up, you have to grant them the right to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, if they make it in, they get to play.
Yeah, because you never know. But anyway, so those are the two ways you get into this tournament, and
or bribed your way in.
bribing the judging panel with one of those at-large bids. And speaking of how you get into the tournament, I've got to give a shout out to LaSalle University.
There you go.
It's been 21 years, I think, since LaSalle has made the NCAA tournament. This year, LaSalle was kind of, they started out really good. And then towards like the last week of the season, they started to falter a little bit because they had some tough competition against a nationally ranked team, by the way, St. Louis.
Wow.
They lost to them. And then they lost to another nationally ranked team in the A-10 tournament. So I guess the judging panel took those into consideration and granted LaSalle a spot in the tournament. Granted, it's a play-in seed, but it's for a play-in for a 13 seed. Oh. So it means that they were considered higher up on the list than some of these other play-in games.
Well, that's good. That's great news for LaSalle.
Yeah.
Why don't you explain?
Especially this year since it's their 150th anniversary, too.
Wow.
So
there you go. It's all coming together.
Matter of fact, Wednesday night when they play the play-in game is the 150th anniversary dinner at LaSalle.
I hope they win that game.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Why don't you explain to people why you're so excited for LaSalle making it, though, in case they don't know?
I went to LaSalle. That's where I went for undergrad and graduate. That's just where I started my inclination for radio and audio, and that's where I got to start my own radio show at WEXP. And
everybody that's listening to this in the Philadelphia area should be excited because it is an area team.
Yeah, so, it is. Yeah. And we have three Philadelphia area teams in the
Nova made it, right?
Nova made it, and Temple made it.
There you go.
So yeah,
we have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, Philly has a good shot of, you know, there's three teams in it.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
If all of them could at least win their first game, that'd be nice.
Another piece of Philly proud history, if you want.
Yeah.
Villanova is the lowest ranked team to ever go on and win the whole thing. They were a number 8 seed, if I remember correctly.
They beat Georgetown, right?
Yeah, in the championship game, and they weren't supposed to.
Like in the 80s, right?
I don't remember the year off the top of my head, but yeah, it was just huge. So that distinction goes to a Philly team, Nova, going into their inner Rocky.
Yeah. During this fight, I've seen a lot of changing. But if I can change, you can change. Everybody can change.
There we go. Thank you, Rocky.
Everybody can change.
So, there you go. Dragon in there in Rocky.
Yes.
So March Madness, looking forward to it. And we will reveal a special madness of our own coming up later on in the episode.
Is it a psychological madness?
Maybe.
Okay.
That was a heck of an effort, and that puts him in third and manageable, and now he has to manage it.
You want madness? Just go no further than John Madden.
Okay. That was barely relevant.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. Go
Only ahead. The thinnest thread of relevancy, but that's usually how things work on this show.
Yeah. All right, so what else do we have in the sports sampler?
Well, I heard some interesting news about the cold weather, not controversy, but the discussion about cold weather Super Bowls. As we know, this upcoming Super Bowl in 2014, after the 2013 season, will be played in New York City.
Wow. Yep, New York.
So never before has a Super Bowl been played in a cold climate like that. And of course, everyone's afraid, oh, will it snow or will it rain, or, you know, what other elements will the teams have to deal with? And Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, said he's very excited to see it and that he would make a bid for Philly to host a Super Bowl if the New York one goes well.
Yeah, can you imagine a Super Bowl in Philly?
Oh, there'd be pandemonium.
Oh, my God.
Watch us get the bid, and then the Eagles make the Super Bowl.
You're calling it right now.
Well, I'm not calling it. We have the worst luck in the world. That'll never happen.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen.
And then the Eagles lose that Super Bowl in Philly, and the city gets burned to the ground.
Or like, it ends up being like the Cowboys that win it. There would be riots if the Dallas Cowboys win the Super Bowl in Philadelphia.
They wouldn't make it out of the city alive. But I want to talk about cold weather Super Bowls because I brought up the issue on Reddit. I'm a big Redditor. And it was interesting because most of the fans of warm weather teams were very against the idea. Whereas people from like Seattle and Philadelphia and New York, they're like, oh, we love it. It should be played in the cold. And, you know, Green Bay, of course, they would love that idea.
Can you imagine a Super Bowl in Lambeau Field?
No, I couldn't. Actually, I think that would be really fun to watch on TV.
Yeah, in your warm, nice home. Yeah.
I don't know, there's just something about battling in the elements, right?
Yeah.
You know, it brings back all those visions of like hard-fought games, and they're all like dirty and, you know, rough and tumble type guys. Yeah, I'd like to see more games in the elements.
I would say that all because a stadium is in the outdoors shouldn't mean that it should not, that it would be automatically off the list for a Super Bowl. I don't like that reasoning. But I understand the concern that you want the Super Bowl played in some sort of climate that you can control, because the Super Bowl is much bigger than now football. You have to admit that. First things first is the Super Bowl. It is supposed to be for the championship of the National Football League, but it's so much more than that now. It's a show. It's its own ratings juggernaut.
That was one of the main points that was brought up by some of the people commenting, is that it's not so much for the fans anymore. I mean, there's so many celebrities and, you know, famous people that go to the Super Bowl. They don't want to sit outside in the weather. And like you said, it's a whole, it's like a spectacle. There's like festivities around it. There's media day. There's the Pro Bowl. There's people go out into the town. It's like a whole big event. So if there's inclement weather, it's going to cut profits drastically. And that's something that I guess the NFL doesn't want.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that? Because somebody brought up that it wasn't for the fans.
I don't like that concept. And I'm pretty sure the NFL PR squad would not like to hear that slogan being tossed around.
But to a certain degree. I mean, isn't it about the media coverage, about all the celebrities? Because they always cut the camera like, oh, look who's here today. It's somebody famous nobody cares about.
You want... I mean, you want it to be presentable to all media markets in a way that, you know, bringing in a celebrity, bringing in the hottest musical act for a halftime show, bringing in a superstar to give you the national anthem. I mean, I get it.
I guess even the fans in attendance aren't the diehard fans. Those are like
No, the diehard fans are the ones that'll show up to 8 home games of a sub 500 team.
Yeah, but those are the same fans that can't travel to the Super Bowl oftentimes.
Yeah. I mean, the people who are going to go to
these are like the quote unquote elite fans.
Yeah, the people who are going to go to the Super Bowl are people that have the necessary funds to go to the Super Bowl.
So I guess the argument isn't for, it's not for the average Joe, beer swilling, nacho eating, tailgating guy. It's for the fans that are more well-to-do.
And, yeah, they have money.
And they don't want to sit outside in the snow, I guess, is what they're saying. It's like the top 1% of the fans.
Yeah, it's the 1%.
It's the 1%. It always goes back to the 1%.
Occupy Super Bowl!
Let's do it. Let's go to the Super Bowl.
Let's go to NFL headquarters. Occupy Super Bowl.
But, I don't like the statement that it's not for the fans, but I think there's a certain element where it's not for the 99% fans. It's for the very wealthy. It's not for people like us.
Yeah, you got to have connections to get to a Super Bowl.
It's for people that, know the team owners or know players or are celebrities themselves, at least to a certain extent.
But as for any sort of team concerns,
right?
No, they don't have any excuse.
Yeah, I made the point that during the regular season, you go to places like Lambeau and places like Seattle.
Yeah.
If it's snowing, what do you do? Postpone the game until spring?
No.
It's we'll play this game in April. Don't worry about it. Like, there's playoff games held in Lambeau.
Yeah.
What do they,
they don't postpone them.
Yeah, they don't postpone them.
They don't transport them to a dome facility.
And some people were saying that the fans of the teams that lose will always refer back to that. Oh, if it wasn't for the weather, it'd be a different story. And that would cause a big debate that would never end.
Like snowballs and stuff like that?
Yeah, they're just...
Nah. I'm sorry, that's a weak excuse.
It is a weak excuse. I've always been of the opinion that you win and lose by your own merits. I don't want to hear people say, oh, that one fumble cost us the game. No, because you can look on both sides of the ball and find at least 3 instances that could turn that game around. So it's not just that one fumble. It's not just that one dropped pass. It's always, you could have done something else.
Yeah. That's the logic you always want to have as a head coach.
Yeah.
To motivate your team into not making stupid mistakes.
Right.
That, that 5-yard offside penalty, because you weren't focusing, might end up costing us a game. You always want to have that kind of mentality. No matter how little a mistake that you make, it could affect the outcome of the game.
Right, but the whole game doesn't rest just on that one. Like, I hate people that use that as an excuse.
Yeah.
Like, just as a local example, when the Eagles lost the Super Bowl and then Spygate came out, I don't want to hear people saying, oh, well, they would have won if they didn't have the defensive plays, if the Patriots hadn't stolen the defensive plays or whatever. I don't like that excuse.
No, we lost because Donovan McNabb puked in the fourth quarter on
the midfield line. We lost because of our own problems. I don't want to place our fate in the hands of something else. Like, own it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Own it.
I don't want to hear a football player complain about the weather.
Here's what's going to happen. Everybody's going to complain. They're going to get there. They're going to play. And the only ones that will complain afterwards are the fans. The players, they probably don't even care.
Well, they shouldn't. They really shouldn't. They're tough. They're tough men. Come on.
They're getting paid millions of dollars to do this.
Yeah. You can play in snow if it happens to snow.
And furthermore, it's not like they're playing in a friggin' blizzard.
Yeah, usually.
They're not wading through 3 feet of snow.
And if there is a blizzard that happens to come through the area that particular day.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they do something. I mean, remember that one day there was a blizzard here in Philly on the same day as a Monday night game and they had to delay it till Tuesday?
Yeah. Yeah.
They might have to, absolute worst case doomsday scenario. Maybe that happens.
Super Bowl Monday.
Super Bowl Monday. And then you get Monday off.
Then you
have to take Monday off. I don't know.
Most people take that Monday off regardless.
Yeah.
That's why it should be a national holiday. If you're listening, lawmakers.
Yeah. Congress, get on that.
Yeah.
The Rich and Mike Political Action Committee. Yes.
If the next president doesn't have that as one of their campaign points, I'm not going to vote for them. So I know you also wanted to talk about Roy Halladay.
Yes. Oh, so yeah, this is another story that came up during the week. So Philadelphia Phillies pitcher Roy Halladay. I don't know what's going on with Roy Halladay because he was supposed to be the number one starter
Right. There was the
lead anchor of the Philadelphia Phillies bullpen rotation.
When he first came here, it was like the biggest thing in the entire world.
Yeah. And I mean, he is a huge talent.
Yeah.
I mean, the man threw a no-hitter in a playoff game.
Yeah, that's
impressive. I think a lot of people forget that. Like,
this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah. A lot of people just kind of threw that, kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess that's cool. Like, no, you're playing a playoff team. You know, a team that obviously has some talent.
Yeah.
To be able to win their own division or win the wild card spot. And Roy Halladay just straight up threw a no-hitter on them. not just win the game, not just throw a complete game, not throw a shutout game, a no-hitter? Like, what? There's a reason why that never happens. I think that there's only been like another instance that happened like 1960
I'm
or
not
something.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely noteworthy. It's not something you just say, oh, yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah. I feel like when that happened, a lot of media was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess that's cool.
You know, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Every other day, you know?
Well, here's what I think is going back to that
okay,
specific
yeah,
thing.
Go ahead.
You know, when the first no-hitter of each season is kind of, oh, wow, that's interesting.
Right.
Then the second one happens, like, oh, I guess that's cool. Third one, all right. And then, like, by the time you hear, like, the fourth or the fifth one, it's like, all right, this is kind of old.
One year they had a lot, didn't they?
Yeah. But to have it happen in the playoffs, again, that's just amazing. All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my word on it. Amazing.
So to get back to the original point.
Yeah, the original point. So this is the kind of guy we're talking about. Heavy, heavy star in the pitching world. So he goes into this off season, and they've been noticing his pitches don't have that same zip. You know, but it's all right. You know, he is getting older, but not too old. He shouldn't be.
Right
at the
right.
end of his career, but he might be fading a little bit. All right, that's to be expected. Then the Philadelphia management says he has an illness, just an illness that
quote unquote illness.
I don't like it when you can't specify like what is he cold like a fever.
Yeah, that always
just illness.
That's always shady and doesn't bode
and then
well.
And then announced in the roster report that he lost 10 pounds because of it.
Oh,
like. Wow.
That's not a normal illness then.
Yeah, like, I'm kind of a big guy. I wish when I had the flu, I lost 10 pounds. Like,
yeah,
just...
if I lost weight every single time I got sick, man,
yeah.
I'd be a different person.
We could have beach bodies and be ready to go for the summer. Yeah. But it's all right.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, you know what that says to me? That says that it wasn't just an illness.
Yeah.
There must
I
be
just,
something
I hope,
else going
I hope
on.
It's not something serious.
Yeah, because, I mean...
And also, another thing to mention is that between... him losing zip, a little bit of zip on the baseball, and Cole Hamels just becoming more vocal in the pitching locker room.
Right.
They've put Cole Hamels now as the number one starter over Roy Halladay. He'll be the opening day starter.
Interesting.
So I don't know if maybe that bodes anything, but I don't know. We'll see.
Do you think Cole Hamels is better than Roy Halladay, like in terms of ability?
I don't think so.
Because, I mean, Roy Halladay at least was widely regarded as the best pitcher.
Yeah. I don't think so. But I think Cole Hamels, this is going to sound awful, but I think Cole Hamels is more of a Philly. Like, Cole Hamels, he has spent his entire...
Right. He
won the World... He was the World Series MVP with the Phillies.
Yeah.
Like,
we brought him up. We didn't sign him through free agency or anything like that.
Yeah, he is a Philly through and through. When his career's done, he'll be... remembered as a Philly. He'll go in the Hall of Fame as a...
So you think
if he goes in the Hall of Fame, he'll be a Philly.
So you think this is more of, like, honoring his legacy here? I mean,
Not like... I don't think honoring his legacy...
Not legacy.
That old.
Yeah, legacy isn't a good term.
But I think...
Like, making him the face of the franchise, sort of?
Yeah,
type thing?
It makes more sense for him to be the leader of this team right now.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that was a problem after the World Series. There were reports in the 2009 and 2010 season.
Right. I remember
that
yeah.
Cole Hamels kind of, especially after the World Series loss in 2009 to the Yankees,
right?
That he kind of regressed a little bit. He wasn't as vocal.
There was a lot of talk that it went to his, like it messed up his head.
A little bit.
Like the victory went to his head and then the loss like messed him up.
Yeah. But as of last season, he seemed to regain his focus.
Well,
and
that's
good. And good thing too, it was a contract year. I always love that. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so skeptical of athletes, but it just always seems like whenever it's a contract year, all of a sudden the stats get through the roof.
Yeah, you see it all the time with football players.
Yeah.
They put in that extra little oomph when the contract is up.
Yeah. Another Philly who did that was Pat Burrell, Pat the Bat.
Yeah, you know? That was the main thing about him.
He, you know, they win, you know, that year, 08, when the Phillies won the World Series, he was at the end of his contract. He knew he was going to be a free agent.
That's why they won.
I mean, I don't know.
To boost his market value, right?
I mean, you know, I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it always seems that way. Whenever the last year of a contract, oh, I guess I better spend that extra hour in the training room.
I better try this year.
Yeah.
There is maybe a little bit of truth to that, though. I mean, think about, we're not athletes, yeah. But when something's on the line, you turn to just kick it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, look at Asamoah.
Yeah,
he gets signed that huge contract, and then he's just like, well, I guess I can take it easy.
Just stretches his arms and goes, that?
Yeah. I'll let that wide receiver burn me for a 70-yard touchdown. All right.
It's like, looky here, I'm making $12 million this year. I'm, you know, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's not our problem anymore.
No,
I hate sounding so cynical. You know,
a little bit, yeah. But I mean, some of it's true.
As a person, he always seemed like a really nice person because he does a lot of charity work and whatnot. But he just, I don't know what it was. He went from like the number one corner in the league to like falling right out of the top 20. Maybe
I think it's what you said before. Like you get soft.
Yeah.
You know, you get soft when you have that success.
Yeah, or you get conservative.
Yeah.
Because you're afraid that if you make a mistake, you're going to be under a magnifying glass.
Yeah, there you go.
I was trying to say microscope glass.
Microscope glass, oh yeah. Science!
I don't hate you.
Thank you.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yes.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about in the sports sampler?
I don't know, I think that was a pretty good sampler. Is there anything you want to mention?
I don't know, I think you had mentioned you wanted to talk about something about pitchers.
I'm glad you write all these notes down. I always forget what the hell I wanted to say.
Oh, you didn't write down a rundown for yourself, did you?
No, I didn't. I was too busy with the odd news because I got a lot of odd news for later in the show.
Yes. Odd news is going to be good later. But anyway.
Yeah. But pitchers always seem to be a very odd position for me in all of sports.
Okay.
Because you have to set up your starting rotation. So you have to have four guys that you can bank on to go on a rotation throughout your 162 games. Then you have starting pitchers. Then you have relief pitchers who come in and take care of the guy. And then you have to have closers who know how to handle high-pressure situation in that ninth inning to get those three outs.
And even within those positions, there's like different variations because certain closers go in for two innings.
Yeah.
Other closers only go in for like the last third of an inning, you know?
That's another thing. Yeah, you'll get measured.
Weird.
You'll get measured your inning time like in thirds because of the outs.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just always seems funny to me. Like you would never have like a relief quarterback that would
a
come
relief
in the third
quarterback.
Yeah, that would come in the third quarter.
We're taking the second half of the third quarter off. A lot of football teams seem to do that though. The Eagles in particular, but actually they take a break from the first quarter. But no, you're right. And then that's where part of the strategy comes in. What makes it fun, because sometimes if a starting pitcher is really struggling, you know, they get pulled like in the third or fourth inning if it's really bad, and then you got to make up, you know, you got to find players to fill in for the rest of the game.
That's another thing too with baseball, is once you're benched, you're benched.
Yeah,
you don't come back, so you always have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what it is. Like, I can grasp the strategy of football a little better than the strategy of baseball. I guess it's because I watch football more. But the strategy of baseball has always fascinated me. It's beyond my depth. You know, I'm out of my wheelhouse when I talk about baseball, but I still find it fascinating. I think it's such a huge part of the game.
Yeah, and then you have pitchers who will want to throw as long as they can,
right?
And then other pitchers that are like, you know, but if I'm reaching 85 pitches, yeah, I think you might want to pull me out, coach.
Yeah.
Or Roy Halladay, going back to the original topic,
right.
Roy Halladay is a machine. If you don't tell him it's the ninth inning, he'll keep going.
Yeah.
I will pitch until my arm falls off.
Yeah, I remember some games where the pitch count was like really high, like astronomically so, like over 120 pitches and stuff like that. Am I right?
Yeah. My arm is going to fall off.
It's like he's like Gumby. His arm is just like, you know, all elasticity, but whatever.
Yeah.
Is that a word? And elasticity? Anyway.
And to go back to my original point of how special that no-hitter is.
Right.
Usually, even if your pitcher, you know, probably because he had a no-hitter, you left him in. But even if your pitcher's throwing a shutout in a playoff game, usually you'll call him back in because you don't want to get your star player hurt or you don't want to get him.
Yeah, you're going to need him later in the series.
Yeah, you're going to need him later in the series. You're going to need, if you win the series, then you're going to need him later in the next series or in the World Series. That's so another thing that makes it special that you really don't see that.
And there's the strategy again that I was talking about.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strategy to it.
It's also interesting how, like, when they do, during the season, most teams have a five-pitcher rotation. They have five starting pitchers that they'll that they'll use to play the course of the next couple of games. But when you hit the playoffs and you're based on series, then you limit to only like three or four.
Well, because you want to at the most you only have seven games.
Right, you only have seven. Yeah, so you want to keep those star pitchers up the pitch for you. I was about to say up the bat, and it doesn't make sense.
We want our star pitchers at the bat.
That's the National League. Woo! Yeah, woo. That's another. You know what? That's another thing too that I always found interesting about baseball is that there is a difference between the National League and the American League. There are different rules.
Yeah.
The other sports don't have that.
Yeah. That'd be weird if, like, the NFC was like, we only had four guys on the line of scrimmage or something. it is weird because, the AL uses designated hitter.
Right.
Like, no other league has, like, a special rule just for one half of the league.
Right.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The AFL, when that was in existence.
Right.
They had the two-point conversion, and I think the NFL didn't.
Oh, and they adapted it?
And then when they merged, they adapted. I think that... Way back when,
the points for each type of scoring was different. Like, touchdowns was, like, 4 points or something really weird. I'm talking, like, in the 20s and 30s.
No, the Leatherheads.
Yeah, I remember reading that in a little, record book or something, whatever it was, this old beat-up record book from, like, the 60s.
That's what Mike does in his spare time.
I read old beat up record books.
So that's funny. You'll just never see another sport that'll do something like that.
I think more sports should
just to make it more complicated,
mix it up a bit. But that I guess concludes the sports sampler.
We
actually had a lot to talk about there, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was a packed sampler for you guys.
Yeah. We might have overloaded you. Don't fill up on the bread yet.
Don't fill up on the bread because we still have the entertainment entree coming out.
Ooh.
Yeah. So you wanted to mention that one of your favorite TV characters, David Brent, from the original UK version of The Office, you wanted to talk about something.
Yeah. If you're on the YouTubes.
The YouTubes.
If you're on the YouTubes where it's all exciting and you can tube.
You can tube as much as you want.
You can tube as much as you want.
That's really, that's weird.
Ricky Gervais, the man who came up with the British version of The Office. And
such a funny guy.
He's just awesome. Is bringing back the original David Brent character from the British Office series.
Nice.
And he's going to make it like his own David Brent YouTube channel. And to kick things off... there's like a short 5-minute video that just does like a catch up as to where David Brent has been for the last 10 years since the British Office went off the air. And that's who Michael Scott was based off of in the US office.
Right.
Yeah. And I know you love that show.
One of my favorites.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
And that's where that clip comes from Michael Scott.
Oh, man. I love that. That whole series is amazing.
For those that haven't seen the British version of The Office, if you're trying to compare Michael Scott and David Brent, my only suggestion would be that David Brent is more unlikable than Michael Scott.
Right.
And it makes it more funny, to me at least. I don't know. Because it's more of a dark humor boss than it is the Michael Scott lighthearted. Oh, well, at least he has good in his heart
Everything that he messes up, there's still that underlying like lovability of Michael Scott.
Yeah. Michael Scott is actually a kind person. Like he might be selfish, he might be egotistical, but he if he did something wrong, he'll feel bad about it.
Right.
Ricky Gervais as David Brent, on the other hand, doesn't care. Like,
at all.
No, he's only, he's so egotistical and so wrapped up in himself that he's just, he can't do wrong. To him, he is like the moral authority. He is the Jesus Christ. He can do whatever he wants to.
You showed me an episode of it once, and yeah.
And I think that just, I think for the British version, with that also throws in a little bit of darker humor than the...
Well, that's British humor in general, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of dark and...
It's a little bit darker than American humor. I just work so, it works so much better. I personally just love it. And so anyway, so they did like a 10-year, oh, what's David Brent been up to the last 10 years?
Right.
And apparently the storyline that they're running with is that he is trying to help out an up-and-coming rapper named Johnson.
Of course, because...
Because obviously David Brent, the
white middleman boss...
Oh, yeah, a white British businessman.
...knows the rap music.
Of course. Isn't that always the case?
Aren't you hip to the rap music? Yes, he is. And he tries to help out this rapper named Johnson by incorporating a joke that he did in The Office where he said he always had a song for a peace reggae anthem called Equality Street. And you think that the rapper is going to sing Equality Street, but then David Brent hijacks the song.
Oh, no.
So I'll just play a little bit of it here for you.
All right.
Let me take you down Equality Street. You never know the people you meet. At the end of the street is a golden gate. And let in love, it don't let in hate, no. Walk with me down Equality Street. Do unto others and life is sweet. Books have no covers, just look right in. You're judged by your words, not the color of your skin. Oh, deo, 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 missy, deo.
There you go. Billy Billy Bong Yo.
Equality Street. And that was actually Ricky Gervais singing,
that,
right?
That's actually Ricky Gervais singing, by the way, trying to do his best reggae.
It's so cheery and uplifting. It's so counter to what you would imagine. Take you down to Equality Street.
Oh, deo, 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 missy, deo.
Can we just set that on repeat and have it play in the background?
I've made that an official entry onto our soundboard.
Nice.
Billy, Billy, Bong, yo.
I don't know when we're going to use that, but I'm sure you can find a way to incorporate it.
Yeah,
you always do.
We'll find a way.
You're like magic on that soundboard.
We're gonna come across like an odd news story 2 weeks from now, and the guy's gonna be named Mr. Diddley or something.
Mr. Diddley. It's a reggae version of Ned Flanders. Diddley diddley. Neighborino diddley diddley. All right, that's all, folks. That's good stuff right there.
There you go.
So is going to be a new series on YouTube?
Kind of, yeah. He'll be
like a mini series, or is it
he'll be posting videos as to what's David Brent up to this week or something.
So it's gonna be it's gonna continue the faux documentary,
right?
Cool.
So
cool, yeah. I'll check that out.
Go Ricky Gervais. I support you on this.
Yes, I will support any of Ricky Gervais's ventures, because he's a funny dude.
Yep.
There was also some news in movies. The next MGM came out and said the next James Bond will land in about three years from now. And you had mentioned something else about this upcoming film that they announced.
Yeah, and also in addition to that, Sam Mendes, who did the movie Skyfall, the last one that came out. Yeah, everyone has been loving anybody. Even if you're a casual Bond fan, and you might have been like, "Oh, I don't think I get Bond anymore. I don't think he's relevant to me." You go see Skyfall, all of a sudden you want to go back into the Bond.
People that don't like James Bond have told me that it was really incredible. Yes. I still haven't seen it yet. I really, really want to see it.
You really should, Mike. It's awesome.
Yeah.
He did Skyfall. They're saying he's not going to come back for the next Bond movie.
Is it like a contract dispute or just because...
No, he just...
doesn't want to do it?
Yeah, he just, you know... A lot of Bond directors are like that. You do one Bond, and it's kind of like, all right, I've made my mark on the Bond legacy. I can step aside. And it's also apparently really grueling to shoot one of these Bond films. Between all the stunts you've got to plan.
It must be crazy.
They said it's like trying to make a movie, but to the nth degree. It's one of the toughest films that you could try and decide to make.
Is this his only Bond film?
I believe so, yeah. I don't think he did another one.
So it's just one and done. But you said a lot of them were like that.
A lot of directors, especially in the modern era of Bond, have, you know.
That's all right.
Yeah.
A lot of directors only have that one big movie.
Yeah, but I'm
talking about movies in general. There's, you know, a handful of directors that go on and make lots of big hit after hit. But a lot of directors, you only see that one movie.
Even though it's going to be 3 years from now... I'm still excited to see whatever direction they decide to go with the next Bond movie.
Yeah,
especially with how they did Skyfall.
No spoilers.
I'm not gonna spoil it for you.
Okay,
this will be Daniel Craig's fourth Bond movie.
Is that the most of any or no?
No, Connery and Moore are tied. Sean Connery and Roger Moore are tied with. Let me see if I can do this.
Okay. Oh, gosh. What did I do?
Dr. No from Russia with Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, Diamonds Are Forever. Yeah, he did six official.
Okay. Wait, what do you mean official?
Yeah. If you really want to delve into the lore, he did, Sean Connery did an unofficial James Bond film called Never Say Never.
Okay.
But it wasn't done by... the actual company, the actual Eon company.
Well, how did that work? How do you do an unofficial?
It was a long.
That's like I'm going to do an unofficial Star Wars movie, or I'm going to do
It was a long legal battle that happened with the rights of Thunderball, where an independent producer was actually able to prove in court that he had the legal rights to make Thunderball, not Eon.
Who dropped the ball on that one?
Hey, there you go.
Oh, that was bad. Anyway.
And so he straight up decided, I'm going to make my own Bond movie.
And nobody could stop him.
Yeah. And And was able to get the attention of Sean Connery.
So really, he has seven Bond
films. Yeah. But it's declared, Never Say Never was kind of declared as unofficial. And it wasn't really a good Bond movie.
That's funny.
To put it in perspective, Mr. Bean is in that movie. Rowan Atkinson is in Never Say Never.
Yeah, I don't... I can't even... Because the only thing that I've ever
He ended up doing Johnny English, which is a spoof of James Bond. And right. It was hilarious. I love Johnny English.
Was Mr. Bean a serious role in that movie?
Kind of. He was still a little bit goofy.
I can't picture him...
He trips and falls into a pool and...
Slapstick.
Little, yeah. Ugh.
Uh-huh. Anyway, but for some reason, I thought the number was lower, like four or five. I don't know.
No, Pierce Brosnan did four.
Okay.
He was supposed to do five, and then when they decided to do Casino Royale, and they realized, they cut him off.
Oh.
Yeah, they wanted a new Bond.
I think it worked out for the better.
Yeah, well, the beginning of Casino Royale starts off as 007, or James Bond getting his 007 license.
Yeah, it's like a prequel kind of.
Would you want Pierce Brosnan, who's towards the end of his Bond career...
Yeah, to go back in time.
And, yeah. They said, we're going to start fresh.
Wow.
We'll look for a new Bond.
Huh.
And Pierce Brosnan is a little bit bitter over that.
Really?
There was a report that came out that they were going to try and reunite all the Bonds for this year's Oscars, because it would be the 50th year of Bond.
I remember we talked about that during our Oscar coverage.
Yeah. And the two people that turned it down was Sean Connery. He still has a little bit of beef with James Bond.
Okay.
And Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan was the second person to turn it down. So.
Because of them cutting him off.
I think so. I mean, I don't know what Pierce Brosnan's thinking. But
you can't pin it down, but that's what it seems
like. It seems like to me, yeah. He's almost kind of like, this is generation's version of Sean Connery, I guess. Because you wish they had ended on better terms.
Yeah, but...
Like, Roger Moore... But the funny thing about Roger Moore is, like, he admits his movies were the corny ones. He admits...
He owns it, right?
Yeah. Like, he goes on interviews and he tells the story of how, like, they told him, oh, we want you to be in, like, this action scene and we want you to be sliding down the mountain in a ski. And he's like, I don't want to do anything. I really don't.
We have this awesome action scene planned for you. I don't feel it.
Hey, he's like, send the stuntman in. Like, and wow. Right, yeah. And I was the lovey-dovey Bond. Like,
the lovey-dovey Bond.
Yeah, he was. You know? He was there to get to woo the women. He was the wooing Bond.
Oh, he was that Bond.
He was.
Yeah.
That was his Bond.
Whatever. And, to each his own.
Right.
You interpret the character how you interpret the character.
Yeah. And that's a special thing with the Bond films, is that each actor has their little take on Bond.
Yeah, you mentioned that once. Like, they each played up like a different person, a different part of his character.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Like, Sean Connery was, you know, the original incarnation of it, but, like, he was more of the thrill seeker kind of.
Right, right.
He was the thrill seeker Bond. Roger Moore's the lovey-dovey Bond. Then you have, everyone keeps forgetting George Lazenby. Poor George Lazenby. He does the one film and nobody remembers him.
Yeah, I didn't even know that name until you mention it right now.
Yeah, he did on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Okay.
And he's the first Bond to get married. But
wow.
Yeah. I didn't realize
that was part of the lore.
Yeah, only one of the two times Bond is in a serious relationship.
Huh.
The second one is Casino Royale.
Uh-huh.
Timothy Dalton is like the renegade Bond who doesn't always follow M's orders. He's another one I think people underrate a whole lot. Pierce Brosnan is like the 90s Bond with like
the 90s Bond
with like the stiff ass British kind of attitude, though. Like he's still got to stick up his ass or something. And then Daniel Craig is, you know, the current modern.
I like how you classify him the 90s Bond. He's like radical, dude.
He's not the surfer Bond.
No, I know, but
they technically did surf in the one movie, yeah. Which that sucked.
No, oh, just when you think of the 90s, it's all like
radical.
Radical.
All right, so what's the next?
But
I don't want to get into Bond. Yeah. I didn't want to. I'm sorry, hijack this conversation.
But speaking of movies, right? Here's our big news in the entertainment entree.
Uh-oh, we got big news.
Yeah, we had mentioned earlier that we are into the March Madness spirit. We're going to be doing a bracket of the best movies. Well, not the best movies, but our personal favorite movies. Yeah, we're devising a bracket to
woo! It's a celebration of movies.
Yes. We're picking our favorite 64 movies, and we're going to narrow it down to our favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, this is going to be intense.
Are you excited for this?
Yeah, I want to see how this bracket's going to form.
Yeah, we're still ironing out the details, but I don't know. Do you want to talk about it?
Well, I mean, you know, it's we wanted to do something for March Madness, but we know that some people aren't into sports. So we wanted to make this kind of something that everyone would have an opinion on. Everyone has an opinion on a movie.
Yeah.
Everyone sees movies.
Everybody has seen a movie.
Yes, everyone has seen a movie, all right?
Well, mostly everyone.
So, yeah, we wanted to do this just for fun. Let's see if we can crown the champion of the movies.
So,
challenge accepted.
Okay, yep. Challenge accepted. Yep. It is official now.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking, we're going to rank our top 64 movies, and Rich is going to take the averages, right? And we're going to put that into one giant list.
Yeah, we're going to take our favorite movies, and the 64 that we decide are going to be in this tournament, we're going to rank them from 1 to 64, including Bruno.
And yeah, including
Bruno
my
from behind
John
the
Bruno.
Scenes.
He just pokes his head up.
Poor Bruno. Has to do work.
Yeah, he's highlighting a book over there with a, I don't know, what is that, pink marker? Good choice. Yeah, pink. I don't know, can he hear what we just played?
Probably not.
No, he's not in his head.
There you go, he can. So.
You got the sad trumpet, Jay.
There you go, just for
anyway,
Bruno.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be taking movies from all the different eras, from, you know, as early as we want to go to right up until, I guess, today.
We're going to get them in the 64 films. We rank them from 1 to 64. Then we're going to take the averages of those, fill them into a standard NCAA bracket in the S-curve formation. And then from there, we're going to let them fight off against each other.
And, yeah, every week, I guess, we'll do another round until we're down to the top movie. And we'll give a little bit of analysis, a little bit of back and forth. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what movie's going to come out as the best.
I can't wait. I mean, I have a preliminary list right now. You know, I'm excited about it. No, that's only one page of it.
Wow, that's a short bracket.
Yeah, I only have 20 films. But yeah, I have a list here already of some of the films I want to include, and I'm excited to get started on this.
Yeah.
Have you started picking your films?
I've got an idea of films that I want to be in this.
Yeah. Any ones in particular you want to talk about, or you want to...
I don't know. I think we should wait until we get the official 64 movies determined. We put it up on thecrispynoodle.com.
And you guys can have at it, too. You know, let us know. That's part of our criteria, right? We were talking about about how...
We want your help if you want to be involved in this.
Yeah, let us know. You know, contact us on Twitter, Facebook, the website, wherever. But the public opinion is going to be part of how we decide each matchup. We talked about a little bit. We're going to take, like, polls on, like, Facebook and Twitter and Reddit and the website. And then we're going to have our own personal opinion. And then we're also going to take into account the aggregate score of the movie on, like, ratings sites, like Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes. And so we'll use those three criteria to decide who wins the matchup. Of course, our say always is the final say.
Yeah, we'll determine if...
If the public picks something like Big Daddy, I'm not going to let Big Daddy... while it's a funny movie, I'm not letting that in to, like, the top, like, the Sweet 16. It's just not happening. No, so that's an example. Please don't select Big Daddy.
Instead, select The Cable Guy.
Yes, The Cable Guy. Such an underrated movie.
All right, good. All right. Yeah. I'm glad we're on agreement on that one.
Although, well, I don't want to talk about it too much, but... That is an underrated movie.
Yes, it is. I love The Cable Guy.
That's a good movie. There's a lot of good Jim Carrey movies, though.
Yeah.
Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Oh, well, yeah, that's his dramatic.
Better. Well, I'm going to fight for that one when we do our bracket.
That's a great one.
Yeah, I'm going to try and take that to the top eight.
That might be better than Truman Show. I don't know.
I was just about to say the Truman Show is really good. But Eternal Truman Sunshine, Show. It's wouldn't that suck if they matched up?
Oh.
Well, those are going to be on my top 64, definitely. What about you?
I don't know. I think there might only be room for one of them. I might have to do that in my preliminary analysis.
You're going to have 62 movies. You're not going to have enough room for both of them? You serious?
I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. We'll come up with
We still got to hammer out a whole bunch of stuff, but that's the big movie news that we have. Not news, but...
Well, yeah. It's our news.
It's our news. We're making our own news.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do whatever we want. So, I don't know, is there anything else we wanted to tell them about the bracket? I think that basically sums it up.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. We'll be looking for your input.
Yeah, so definitely give us your opinions. We want to take your opinions into account.
Yes.
And I guess now would be a good time to mention, since we're talking about movies, we can transition to TV to bring up the side dish. Last week, we had mentioned something about Chef Ramsay and his show Kitchen Nightmares, and how he would go in and fix up restaurants and make them all fabulous and whatever, but the restaurants would always eventually fail.
Yes.
Right? Well, one listener sent me an email, and she said that the same thing is said about Extreme Home Makeover, how they make over these homes, and they're fantastic. They've got all these gadgets and gizmos, and they upgrade everything, but then because the cost is so high that all those families end up losing their homes within the year. Or not within the, but...
So
very,
correlation to Extreme... Was it Extreme Home Makeover?
Extreme Home Makeover, yeah.
I guess that's a fair correlation, yeah, because they'd use unlimited budgets.
Think about this. I mean, they build these enormous homes with all this energy-sucking technology. And the reason why the people were on Extreme Home Makeover is because they couldn't afford the upkeep of their home. So now you make it even a bigger problem for them. And if all these people are losing their homes... like, how many episodes do you do a season? Maybe 20, maybe more. So it's like 20 people every year. There's like
ABC is the sole reason why we're in a depression right now.
Yeah, it shouldn't be Extreme Home Makeover. It should be Making America Homeless. I mean, over like a decade of shows, maybe, how many people have they put out on the streets through trying to help them? I just wonder. It's an interesting thing to think about.
And a listener brought this to your attention?
Yes.
That's what she said.
That's literally what she said.
That is what she said. That is what she
said. Another Michael Scott quote.
That's what she said.
They're endless. But yes. So we do listen to you people. Sometimes.
So now that we have all of the fan interaction done for, what's it time for, Mike?
It's time for the non-fortune cookie news.
So sit back, get everything you need to get from the kitchen. Be sure and empty the bladders, go to the bathroom, because you're in for a hell of a ride.
That's right. You're in for a hell of a ride with the non-fortune cookie odd news. One of my favorite parts of the show.
Oh, I love this section. Who do you want to start out? Do you want me to start out?
I think you can start out.
Okay. We have, as always, we have our articles.
Our folders.
In folders that we don't show to each other, and they're completely top secret. And so these are the official first time reactions. I think I'm going to start with...
Oh, I can hear the papers whistling on... Yeah. Make it official. Yeah.
Yes.
That fucking sucked.
Why do you only play that when I do things?
That fucking sucked.
Anyway. So let's start with this story out of... I got to compose myself now. The internet was speaking to me in tongues.
There you go. All right, go ahead, Mike.
All right. So the first story out of New York. A 1,000-year-old Chinese bowl was bought for a few dollars at a garage sale in New York State and sold for more than 1.46 million pounds at auction. So that equates to, I think it's $2 million U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. So it says that they bought the Ding bowl, which is from the Northern Song Dynasty, for £2 in 2007 and put it on their mantelpiece. They thought it had no real worth. After consulting with experts, they thought that the bowl could go for 132,000 pounds to 198,000 pounds, but somebody bought it for 1.47 million pounds. There's only one other bowl of the same form, size, and almost identical decoration, and that's been in a British museum for 60 years. And these people had it on this other bowl on their mantelpiece.
Yeah, and it just, no big deal.
No big deal. Yeah, so I think the conversion was, I think, like around $2 million. For a bowl.
They didn't try and figure out where it came from or no?
No, they bought it in 2007 and, you know, it's a little bowl and they put it up on their mantelpiece. It's just five inches in diameter. So this is tiny.
Yeah, you probably don't think it's worth
like,
that much.
Like, put your fingers together in a circle, like, and it's like a small little insignificant bowl. $2 million.
Because I backtraced it!
No, they should have backtraced it. Find out how much it would have been worth.
Because you done goofed.
Yeah, they done goofed.
Yeah, they did.
Missing out $2 million.
It makes you think, what crap do you have in your basements?
Oh, yeah.
That could be worth millions of dollars.
Got something. There's got to be something.
Yeah, this is where the people that hoard, they're like, you never know.
I am, as much as I cringe when I see hoarders, I can't stop watching. When that show comes on.
Yeah, it's like, it's you're addicted to their addiction.
Yeah.
Is that weird or what?
Yeah.
All right. This is from Hastings, Michigan. A burglar stole $800 from a West Michigan store 3 decades ago, has repaid the money plus interest because of guilt. The anonymous thief sent a note and $1,200 in $100 bills to the Barry County Sheriff's Department in Hastings, and they arrived Monday. The writer admitted breaking into the Middle Mart on Michigan 37 in Thornapple Township 30 years ago. Apparently, the letter had a lot of spelling errors, but he said, "I can't begin to say how sorry I am, but I've lived with this guilt too long. If you do find him," referring to the original owner of the store, "please tell him that I was a foolish, stupid man when I did that, and I am sorry." It was unsigned. It had no return address. But, yeah, he returned the $800 that he stole in the 1980s plus interest.
Wow.
So $1,200 in an unmarked envelope. to the police with that note.
Well, at least he was honest about it and paid interest, too.
And interest. Well, they say, though, that the $800 would be worth $1,800 today. So...
Oh!
Because you done goofed.
Yeah, you done goofed.
Done goofed. you don't usually see criminals with a conscience, though.
Yeah, you usually don't.
Aw. Yeah, I think that was nice, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a nice sentiment. Is there any chance that he could be charged after the fact?
I don't know. I think the statute of limitations has probably passed on that. It was 30 years ago.
Yeah, if it's that long, I mean, yeah. I guess you can't.
And, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, $800, I mean, when people steal stuff, it's usually for a lot more than that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that much, but...
I mean, it's a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but, you know...
Probably at the time.
Well, that's true. At the time, like they said, it'd be worth $1,800 today. Yeah, well, at least that store owner got his money back. This story, though, is for you, Rich.
Uh-oh.
This is from Scotland.
All right.
This is when I saw this, I said, oh, man, I got to bring this to the table. The force is strong with the Jedi in Scotland. The Free Church of Scotland is pushing a bill that would grant those who have literally made Star Wars a religion the power to perform marriage ceremonies.
Woo!
The Marriage and Civil Partnership Bill would apply to other non-religious groups such as the Flat Earth Society and the Jedi Knights Society, aka Temple of the Jedi Order. It is the second most popular alternative religion, with 175,000 people listing themselves as Jedi in the 2012 nationwide census. Yes.
Give you a little bit of music for this.
Excellent.
Yes.
The Golden Gate Knights began teaching a lightsaber choreography course in the San Francisco Bay Area. They're talking about the spread of the religion has moved past Europe. The Scottish government plans to hold a public consultation on the bill. And of course, not all traditionally religious groups are happy about creating a new category for ceremonies that are by their very nature arguably a religious practice. One priest said, I'm not saying that we don't give place to that kind of personal belief, but when you start making allowances for marriages to be performed within those categories, then you are all over the place. For their part, the Jedi say the very nature of their beliefs would prevent them from tarnishing any other religious institutions. One person said, we believe in peace, justice, love, learning, and using our abilities for good. So it's unlikely that our way conflicts with the beliefs and traditions of other religious groups.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah. Jedi's going to be an official religion.
It is an official religion, well, I mean, in Scotland.
But now with the power to marry.
That's the bill. They're going to be able to marry people.
Yay! Woo!
Yes.
I could be an official minister, right?
Yeah, if you want to.
I'm a Jedi Knight.
You're a Jedi Knight?
Yeah. Right?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah! Who wants to have a wedding? Who needs to get married around here?
Who needs to get married? Because we got Jedi that will be willing to do it. Yeah, 175,000 Jedi in Scotland.
Wow.
Yeah. Or was that Europe? I don't... It was either Europe or Scotland.
Yeah, what is your...
In England. Oh, in England, it was 175,000. So they're talking about... these Jedi are all over the place.
Now, how about the Sith? Or the Empire?
Oh, I don't know.
Does it have to be Jedi?
I think it has to be Jedi. I guess the Sith would be like a satanic cult. Well, if the Jedi are religion, if they're like quote-unquote Christianity, then the Sith are like Satanists.
I don't know.
Rich is like baffled now. He's like, I don't...
Yeah, so, because, yeah, what happens if one of my cousins who's interested in the dark side of the Force...
Uh-oh.
Does that mean, is it a separate institution?
Well, they can't be married by Jedi then if they're part of the dark side.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so maybe you should start a Sith religion. So
good story, yeah, Mike.
What do you think about that? Jedi Knights performing marriage.
Awesome. Bring it on.
Would you do that if given the chance? Would you be married by a Jedi Knight council?
Sure, but I don't think...
Rich is like, duh, of course.
I don't know if my girlfriend would like it, but...
She's not a Star Wars fan, or she just...
She likes Star Wars, but she's not as fanatical as...
Well, you'll get a reaction after she hears this, I guess.
Yeah.
So I was thinking...
Yeah.
How do you break the news about that one?
We're going to get married in a Jedi temple.
There's this really nice senior Jedi Knight. What are the ranks? Is it Jedi Knight is the highest?
No, Knight's the
that's like the, there's like Padawan.
You made it. Yeah, Padawan is you're in training. The Knight is you've made it, and then Master is like you're on the council.
There's nothing higher than Master. Can you be a Master and not be on the council? Like, can you be, like, a master and not, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi is a master, but he wasn't on the council.
The other way around happened for Anakin. He wanted to be a Jedi master, but they put him on the council, and they never gave him... Yeah, in episode 3.
Anakin was on the council.
Yeah, he was supposed to be the special connection between Palpatine and the council. And he was supposed to be a Jedi master because of it, and they never gave him the Jedi master. And that that's one of the threads that fall apart for him in episode 3.
All right. I didn't remember that. Yeah. Yeah. So Jedi Knight marriages.
Yeah. That was a much longer segment than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah. That's all right.
All right. Should I get to my odd news stories?
This is honestly my favorite segment.
A civilian painter who twice set fires on a U.S. Navy nuclear submarine last year so that he could get out of work early was sentenced to 17 years in prison on Friday.
Now, wait, I work from home. What happens if I set fire to my workplace?
Casey James Fury, a 25-year-old, set two fires nearly a month apart that caused almost $500 million in damages to the USS Miami.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. $500 million. Yeah, this wasn't just a cheap little fire stunt. Prosecutors had requested a 20-year sentence after Fury pleaded guilty. His lawyer argued for a 15-year sentence, reflecting his client's extreme anxiety, for which he was taking medication at the time.
You don't want him setting fire to the prison.
No. Fury started the first fire on May 23rd with a plastic bag filled with rags, igniting a blaze that burned for 12 hours and caused between $400 million and $500 million in damages and injured five people.
So I'm assuming he wasn't caught after the first fire because then there wouldn't have been a second one.
Guess not, because he also pleaded guilty to a second fire on June 16th, 2 days after he had been arrested on suspicion of drunk driving.
This guy's a mess.
Yeah, that fire was quickly pulled out and didn't cause any damage. On June 19th, he then pulled a fire alarm.
Oh my gosh.
Causing an evacuation of the submarine.
Oh, that's right. It's in a sub.
Yeah.
You're burning to death underwater.
Yeah, you can't do this.
I'm sorry. If they reported that in the news, all I could do would be laugh. If they reported, like, people burned to death underwater, I'd be like, that's really funny. It doesn't seem like something that's even possible. Burning to death.
That fucking sucked.
Oh, come on. No, but I'm just saying, like, you're telling me you wouldn't laugh?
Oh,
if you saw if you saw the headline, people burned to death underwater?
Yeah, I don't think you'd laugh. I think you'd question it.
Okay, maybe that's better than laugh. Or maybe I'm just a sick person. I don't know. The internet was speaking to me in tongues.
You do have the internet speaking to you in tongues.
You're going
to
make people think I'm crazy. And they're going, don't worry. We already thought that.
I had a dog named Chili.
It's all right. You're not as crazy as Gary Busey.
People will laugh at you. The Indian elders and the Indian spirits are laughing at you.
There you go.
Anyway, next story.
All right. The next story I've got here. It's bacon fever.
Oh, I love bacon.
Bacon! This is what happens when you put the choice of concessions into the hands of fans. The West Michigan Whitecaps, a minor league baseball team that is an affiliate of the Detroit Tigers, asked its supporters to vote for its top ballpark snack. The highest vote-getter of its fourth annual food contest was the Bako, which is a taco from a shell that's made wholly from bacon.
I love it already.
The concept comes from the Doritos Locos Tacos, but instead of a Dorito shell, this is a bacon shell. It was among 150 fan-submitted selections, according to the team's website, which narrowed the options down to 10, and the Bako led with 30%.
Wow. This is a lot of people that love bacon.
Yeah. Also offered this season in this ballpark is a frightening concoction called the Squealing Pig.
Oh my gosh.
Which bills itself as the spiciest sandwich served at any ballpark. It has pulled pork, a sprinkle of ghost pepper, and flaming barbecue sauce.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Can I just point out, ordering that would be really awkward. I'd like a squealing pig.
Yeah.
Could you imagine going up to the concession stand and ordering, like, for a whole family, be like, I'd like five squealing pigs, please. It's just...
I'm gonna strangle you half to death!
What?
Squealing and strangling.
Oh, all right, then. Is that how they kill the pigs to make the sandwich?
Yes.
They strangle them?
They strangle them.
Is it even possible to strangle a pig? I mean, they've got, like, big necks, you know?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know how you...
But that
I just eat bacon. I don't know how you make it.
That bacon taco, is it like the bacon's on the outside? Do they like, is there anything else crazy about it? Like, do they like put like crumbled up Doritos in it, or
It's what,
dip it in chocolate?
It's whatever you want on the bacon, not taco. Bacon.
Oh, sorry. Oh, the bacon.
Yeah, there's also a picture if you want to see it.
Oh, a picture?
I got a picture for
it. Oh my gosh, it looks like a heart attack. I don't even know how you get bacon to stay like that.
Yeah.
There you go.
You ready for our next story?
Yes.
Authorities in Louisiana say they tracked a man accusing of stealing drugs from a pharmacy because he left behind a pickaxe he used to break in and forgot to remove the price tag off of the pickaxe. Jefferson Parish Sheriff Colonel John Fortuno says the sticker included a barcode indicating when and where the pickaxe was bought, and the store had video of the purchase, and they were able to ID the man from that.
See that? You got to cover all your bases if you're going to be...
That's right.
Wait, was he robbing somebody with a pickaxe?
No, he broke into the pharmacy.
Oh, he broke into it. I was going to say.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was listening to the story, and then all of a sudden I was like, wait, rewind. Did he hold up somebody, or did he break in?
Yeah.
I just imagine a guy holding up somebody like, don't move, I got a pickaxe. See that? They can CSI that stuff.
Yeah, they can.
You got to watch out for that.
All right. Let me go with this story.
All right.
A man from Long Island, New York is facing up to 30 days in jail and a $500 fine. I bet you can't guess for what.
I don't know.
A neighbor complained to police that he was laughing too loudly.
Is this like the whistling story?
But instead this is laughing.
Oh, gosh.
Police issued Robert Chiavelli 2 tickets for disturbing the peace for laughing out the window of his own home in Rockville Center on Long Island.
Wait.
His lawyer said.
Laughing out the window?
Yeah.
Like, was he like hanging out the window just like, just like scream laughing at the top of his lungs?
Yeah, I guess so.
This is really weird.
Don't walk on me. I'm not through gloating.
It might have been Ric Flair.
I didn't even realize you could. So he's spending, 30 days in jail?
He's facing up to 30 days in jail and a $500 fine.
For laughing. Wow.
Yeah. Scavelli said the neighbor regularly mocks his disability, and the best response to the taunts that he faces is laughter. Scavelli lives with his mother, who said in an interview that he has a fairly loud laugh. She says, I think it's infectious, it's cute.
Okay.
So his mom's trying to vouch for him.
Right. But in all fairness, they said that somebody was picking on his disabilities.
It says his lawyer says that his client has seizures as a result of neurological impairments, but he doesn't think that makes his laugh loud or boisterous. So that's the statement from the lawyer. I don't think that makes him like clinically disabled.
No, but what was the part about how he copes with it by laughing or something earlier in the story?
Just as the neighbor mocks his disability.
Oh, so that's, and then he copes with it by laughing.
Yeah.
So the neighbor started it all.
I guess so.
So why is the poor guy with the disability and laughing get arrested, and the guy that's like picking on somebody that's disabled gets nothing?
I don't know.
That's the point that I'm
mother,
trying to make.
The mother says that the neighbor often calls her son a retard, parodies his speech, and mocks his walking.
Dude, that guy should be arrested.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You arrest the guy for laughing, but not the guy that's picking on a poor disabled person? Anyway, This is supposed to be funny. I'm making it sad.
Yeah. We'll see if he actually goes to jail for laughing too loudly in his own home.
Wow. I hope not. That'd be really sad. Way to bring it down, Rich.
Sorry. I thought that was going to be a good one. Oops.
I mean, it was good. I mean, it's funny that he's going to get arrested for laughing.
All right. You ready for the next story?
Yeah.
An upstate New York woman pleaded not guilty on Thursday to 5 counts of child endangerment after other parents complained that she hired female strippers for her son's 16th birthday party. Woo!
Hey, sounds like a good time.
But there you go. Anyway. Judy Vigor, 30... Judy Vigor, 33, of Gansevoort, New York, denied the charges of endangering the welfare of a child at her arrangement in the town of Morrow Court, according to a court spokesperson.
It's not really endangering them.
Yeah, but...
I mean...
Come on!
Just saying, it's not really endangering them.
The parents of the children who attended the birthday party had no idea that the adult female entertainers would be present and were shocked and stunned when they discovered what had occurred, the county district attorney said. Pictures of the event and the dancers first surfaced in media accounts of the story once they were posted to one of the attendants' Facebook page. So one of them bragged on Facebook. Vigor is accused of hiring adult female entertainers from Tops and Bottoms Entertainment of Albany, who performed allegedly at the birthday party. What do you think of that one, Mike?
That's not endangering anybody. I'm just... Oh, come on. Like, a 16-year-old is never... Like, they don't have access to the internet. Please. Right? The internet was speaking to me in tongues.
That's right, Mike.
That's right.
Is that what you do on the internet when the internet's speaking to you?
No comment. I focus on my work.
Forwarding booklet to your quarters. Can supply oils or ointments to reduce discomfort.
So, all right, Mike. I don't know what... All right.
Anyway.
How come we never had these kind of parties?
Yeah. I don't remember what happened for my 16th party. Oh, wait. Yes, I do. It was a barbecue because I have my birthday on the 4th of July.
Straight up barbecue every year.
Hey, that's all right. Hamburgers and hot dogs. It's like awesome food. So, it's all right. Anyway, so... You have another story?
Yeah, I got one last story for you, Mike. A young Florida boy saw his mother arrested on his birthday. Another birthday story.
Oh, another birthday story.
Yeah. I'm having a lot of birthday stories. Yeah. I didn't realize this.
That's all right. All right.
So anyway, a young Florida boy saw his mother arrested for his birthday after his party at Chuck E. Cheese turned into a massive 18-man brawl.
Oh my gosh.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Besides his mother, a man named Robert Thompson and another man named Alfred Peoples were also arrested on drug charges, as well as defrauding an innkeeper, because the trio tried to flee the restaurant without paying a $300 check.
Ah.
The fight began after the two men exchanged words in the restaurant's bathroom. It escalated quickly with the men fighting in the dining room, and then even the fight leading to trampling the boy's grandmother.
Oh my gosh.
Employees were able to get the fighters outside, at which point several drove to a location nearby on a local avenue to continue the fight.
Wait. I'm sorry. I got to stop you. They drove to another location to continue the fight. All right, guys. Here's the plan. We're going to get in the car. We're going to drive down the road. We'll meet you there in like 10 minutes. All right. Is that what happened? Do they carpool? Do they all get in one car?
Yeah, we got to continue the fight.
That is so weird.
Investigators found empty vodka bottles at the scene on the street.
Including
several stashed in a diaper bag.
They're classy people, man.
Once there, an unidentified man shot a gun at a car.
Oh my gosh.
Which then struck a passenger in the leg. This shooter has not been caught.
Was this just like a passerby that wanted to get in on the action? Yeah,
apparently. This identified victim who was shot is not facing any sort of life-threatening situation, so he's okay.
That is weird. I just like the fact that they drove to another location to continue the fight. Like, if you could stop the fight long enough to make plans to go somewhere else to fight, like, why don't you just stop at that moment?
Yeah, you think that would be the end of it.
Like, I don't know. Like, I can't picture this happening in my head. Like, you're fighting with someone. You're, like, all heated and angry. And you just stop. You're like, hold on, guys. We got to, like, take this up somewhere else. So let's, like, figure out who's going to be in what car. You got a van? Yeah. You got a van? You can take us all? Okay, cool. You know that empty parking lot down the street? Yeah, we'll go there. All right, cool. Yeah, let's meet you. Like, who does that?
We're going to continue this.
We're going to continue this. That I can just see them breaking up. You make a valid point, and we will continue this at a later date.
Just later date, meaning like later in the night.
Yeah. And what about the shooter? Just a random guy, an unnamed?
Yeah. Once there, and according to the story, just an unidentified man shot a gun at a car.
Okay.
So altogether, 18 men were involved in this.
Did all 18 men go to the second location?
I don't know, but out of this whole story, 18 men are involved.
Wow. There's some magic bullet stuff there because it hit the car and then ricocheted and
hit the man in the leg. So he's all right.
Well, but I guess that's good to hear.
That's a birthday party.
Yeah. Like you said, like, we didn't have birthday parties like this.
Like, That's right.
I didn't have any brawling strippers.
Yeah, we did not have strippers. We did not have gunfights. We did not have fist fights.
That's a birthday party.
Yeah.
I guess you get the invitation. We will be having water balloons, strippers, and brawls. What they don't tell you is that the two families are related.
Yeah, the stripper and the massive fight at Chuck E. Cheese.
That would be something.
Strippers at Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese is stripping. That's a really messed up party.
Oh my gosh.
It's like a dance fight. That's playing in the background the entire time. This can make a really good movie.
That's the latest movie coming out.
Yeah, that's
out.
The latest movie.
Kid fight. Kid birthday party.
Stripper Chuck E. Cheese Brawlers 2. The Vodka Strikes Back. It's just like the perfect storm of crazy events. I'm getting a headache.
What was that?
I said Stripping Chuck E. Cheese Brawlers 2. The Vodka Strikes Back. Oh my gosh.
Chucky strippers. The search for more vodka.
Search for more vodka. And they hid it in a diaper bag.
Yeah.
They're like, here, yes. Billy, hold this. What is it, mommy? It's water.
Aww. All for a fancy birthday party.
Wait, Chuck E. Cheese is fancy?
Yes, Chuck E. Cheese is fancy. there's gunfights. They're fighting in gunfights.
I remember the games where you had to shoot like the zombies on the screen, but not shoot each other.
I remember Duck Hunt.
Pac-Man's packing. Oh, that was Duck Hunt?
That's Duck Hunt.
This whole thing started because, what, $300 check or something?
Yeah, the trio allegedly fled the restaurant without paying the $300 bill.
So who was fighting them, the staff?
I think the two guys were fighting over who should pay for it.
Oh, who should pay for it.
And then it escalated from the bathroom into the dining room. Then a knocking, allegedly, the grandmother. The grandmother gets into it.
That's like that one Seinfeld episode where George pushes the grandmother over to get out of the burning house. Who are we kidding? The grandma was the one packing heat. That's why they knocked her over.
Consequences will never be the same.
Because you done goofed.
You done goofed.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I got to get them involved. Yeah. He had to get them involved when a gun just... All of a sudden, the gunman pops out.
I'm so angry right now, I could shoot somebody.
Boom! And the worst part is they'll probably never catch that guy.
No.
just came by, boom.
That was the laziest drive-by shooting ever.
Yep.
You just show up, shoot one bullet, and then just, I missed, and then walk away.
All the strippers, gunfight, all for birthdays. Yep, that's our non-fortune cookie odd news for today.
Diddly, diddly, diddly. What was that one from earlier? Oh, deo, 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 missy, deo. Biddly, 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 bong, yo. That sums up the episode.
Yep, biddly, biddly, bong, yo. Trying to be a quality street. We're trying to be peace loving.
Yeah, a quality street. Yeah. Oh, deo, 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 missy, deo.
Biddly, 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 bong, yo. What's that?
If those 18 people had known about equality street, that brawl would not have happened.
No.
Just saying.
Oh,
that's
my gosh.
What this world has come to, Rich. We're going to turn this into a social commentary.
Yes.
When you can't even eat pizza in peace.
Where are we at in society today?
You have a clip for everything.
That's all I got to say. It makes me want to puke.
Mike Gundy wants to voice his opinion on it. Everyone has an opinion on this apparently.
This birthday brawl is a hot topic in politics right now.
Where are we at in society today?
All right, we've gone off the deep end.
Yeah, we're also way
that,
over.
That's usually a sign that we should wrap up the show, so...
Yeah, we need to wrap this up. We're also way over on the count.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, they'll have an extra long episode to listen to.
Yeah.
During this fight, I've seen a lot of changing. And if I can change, you can change. Everybody can change.
That's all you need to know from this episode.
Yes, everybody can change.
Everybody can change.
And we're leading the way. We are the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
We are on Twitter at The Crispy Noodle. We're also on Facebook. Just search The Crispy Noodle in the Facebook search bar and you should be able to find us.
And don't forget to check out the website, www.thecrispynoodle.com.
Yes. And if you want to follow us individually, I am on Twitter at Rich Liebig, R-I-C-H-L-I-E-B-I-G.
I am at Mikey Costanzo, M-I-K-E-Y-C-O-S-T-A-N-Z-O.
And there you go. That'll conclude one of the craziest episodes of The Crispy Noodle we've ever recorded. Keep an eye out for the movie madness that we're going to do.
We will try and update that regularly.
Yeah, that'll be up on the website when this podcast is up. So definitely, if you've got time right after this podcast, go right over to the Crispy Noodle website so you can check out the latest in that movie madness bracket.
And voice your opinion.
Yes, we need your opinion on this.
Yes.
We want the winner of this thing to be legitimate.
Yeah, so we want to get as much info and opinions as we can and bring it all together and make sense of it all. So
you guys will help us determine who is the grand champion of movies.
It sounded like there should be more to that.
Yeah, I'm mad at that.
Like, there's like a comma there, and just
I messed up.
So anyway, let's close the show. We're the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life.
That is right. We'll see you guys next week.
Next week.
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
There you go.
Good times.
Noodle salad, thecrispynoodle.com.
See you guys.
Good times, noodle salad.
That's what she said.